Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's stand up and give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to the New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons, who both scored big victories at home Sunday to advance to the 51st Super Bowl of American-style professional football. In the NFC Championship game, the Falcons soared past the visiting Green Bay Packers 44-21. And in the AFC Championship game, the Patriots beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 36-17. The Falcons and the Patriots both got outstanding performances from their quarterbacks. In Atlanta, Matt Ryan completed 27 of his 38 passes for 392 yards and four touchdown passes, and he ran 14 yards for another touchdown. In Foxborough, Massachusetts, just outside Boston, New England star quarterback Tom Brady completed 32 of his 42 passes for 384 yards and three touchdown passes, two in the first half, to wide receiver Chris Hogan. This will be the seventh Super Bowl appearance for Brady and head coach Bill Belichick, who have teamed up to make the Patriots the National Football League's dominant club since Brady was drafted in the sixth round of the 2000 NFL Draft. They will be bidding for their fifth Super Bowl trophy when the big game is played February 5th in Houston, Texas. The Atlanta Falcons, meanwhile, advanced to the second Super Bowl in the club's 51-year history. In Super Bowl 33, the Falcons lost to the Denver Broncos 34-19 in Miami, Florida. Turning to international soccer or football, some fans approach the sport with near religious fervor, and evangelist preachers have converged on Gabon, hoping to capitalize on the excitement around the 31st Africa Cup of Nations tournament. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the capital, Libreville.
100 singers from seven Pentecostal churches lead people to dance at Boulevard Triomphal in Libreville. This has become a regular event on the evenings of the Group A matches that are happening nearby. Pastor Imohi Peter is from Nigeria, one of the several clerics from revivalist churches around the region who have come to Gabon for the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament.
We are living in a world of chaos, a world of confusion that needs Jesus. So what we do as a church is to pray and say, Lord, bring peace to these various areas where there is no peace.
He preaches by the giant screens installed near the Boulevard Triomphal. After the matches, Peter and his church members counsel new converts and direct them to sister churches in the countries where they will return when the tournament ends. Cameroonian evangelist preacher Mbela David says he is seeing about five new converts a day.
Will you allow God to raise up stone to praise him? Then praise God where? It don't show praise the Lord.
Mbela David is preaching on a bus transporting football fans to the stadium in Libreville. Passengers listen and some even ask questions, but not everyone approves.
Prêcher, c'est bien, mais il faut savoir où le faire et quand le faire.
Oma Bongo University of Libreville student Lidwin Kemke says preaching is a very good thing, but people should know when and where to do it. She says shouting and praying in buses creates total disorder. The Christian preachers are part of an effort called the AFCON Peace Campaign, an effort for religious tolerance and an end to conflict. Kenyan-born Reverend Kamu Stanislaus is the main organizer.
It's very difficult to measure peace. Sometimes you work very hard and there are peace here and peace over there. But then when violence erupts, people remember the violence and forget the time of peace. To work for peace is more difficult than to stimulate violence.
The sidelines of an international football tournament may seem to be an unlikely place for religion, but the pastors gathered here say AFCON is a crossroads. The event draws fans from around the continent, so what better place to get the word out? Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Libreville.
It's the 10th day of action at the Africa Cup of Nations, and the spotlight is on Libreville and the southeastern city of Franceville, where the final first-round matches in Group B will be played this evening. In Libreville, Zimbabwe will take on Tunisia, and in Franceville, Senegal will go against Algeria. The Lions of Teranga from Senegal have already booked a place in the quarterfinals. So now the question becomes, who will be joining them in the knockout round? The Carthage Eagles of Tunisia are best placed to do so. With 3 points, the Tunisians need only a draw against Zimbabwe to go through. Zimbabwe and Algeria, with 1 point each, must win their matches this evening to advance. In Nations Cup action Sunday, host Gabon was eliminated, as we hear now from reporter Samson Omale.
We begin with the 2017 host of the African Cup of Nations, Gabon, who became the fourth nation in history and the first since Tunisia in 1994 to be eliminated from the Cup of Nations in the group stage, despite ending the group stage unbeaten. In contrast, Cameroon, after a build-up to the competition marred by withdrawals of key players, go through to the last eight as runners-up in Group A. Burkina Faso won the group thanks to their 2-0 victory against Guinea-Bissau in the night of the game in Franceville. Later this evening, it will be Senegal confronting Algeria in Franceville, and Zimbabwe will meet Tunisia in Libreville. Tunisia are best placed to go through as runners-up behind Senegal, while Algeria, despite the presence of African Footballer of the Year, Riyad Mahrez, need to win and hope Tunisia lose if they are to go through. On Saturday, Uganda were eliminated from the 2017 African Cup of Nations after losing 1-0 to Egypt in a Group D clash on Saturday night. Ugandan coach Milutin Seradovic says he is leaving a legacy behind.
That a legacy that I have left and I will leave behind is something that will 100% help in 2026 when World Cup will be expanded to 48 teams, that Uganda could be very serious, not just participant, but contender to go to the World Cup.
In the other group game, Mali lost their second 2017 CAF African Cup of Nations Group D match 1-0 to Ghana. The defeat for Alain Griss's men mean they remain placed at number 3 in the group standings with 1 point after a draw and 1 loss. A first half goal from the Black Stars keeper Asamoah Gyan ensured the Ghanaians are through to the knockout stages. And from all the news from the African Cup of Nations, head coach of Nigeria, Ganrot Rao, has said the standards are the ongoing outgoing 2017 African Cup of Nations have been affected by the poor playing surfaces. There has been lots of complaints that some of the injuries being sustained by some of the players have been as a result of the poor pitches. Away from the African Cup of Nations, Chief Executive Officer of the South African Football Association, Dennis Umbele, has assured South African football fans that they will find Sheikh Mashaba's replacement before the end of February. SAFA CEO spoke after the first meeting of the technical committee of the football body since the sacking of Sheikh Mashaba.
We are searching for two coaches. One is the head coach of Banyana Banyana and the other one is the head coach of the men's senior national team. And we discussed the framework that we're going to use to search and hire a new coaches in both of these positions. Basically issues like the criteria we are going to use, what qualities are we looking for in the people we are intending to employ.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Just ahead on The Voice of America, Loic Youth will take a look at some of the highlights from the weekend in European club football.
Greetings, my dear listeners from a Washington, D.C. that underwent changes at the top and saw a show of unity this past weekend. The energy was truly electrifying, and the same could be said of the Emirates Stadium yesterday as a 97th minute Sanchez penalty sent the Gunners faithful into pandemonium and propelled Arsenal into second on the log. Burnley, for the second time this season, suffered late heartbreak at the hands of the Gunners, having cancelled out Mustafi's header with a 92nd minute penalty of their own. So late drama there, and 2-1 the final score. Chelsea capitalized on other title chasers' slip-ups to open up an 8-point gap with a 2-0 win over Hull City. Diego Costa back in the side after rumors of unsettlement, got back to business putting the Blues ahead, then Cahill wrapping up the points in the second half. Liverpool's title challenge took a hit as they stumbled 3-2 at home to Swansea. Paul Clement claiming his first win as Swansea boss in quite impressive fashion. The crunch game of the weekend saw Spurs and City play out to an enthralling 2-2 draw, that game coming alive in the second half. Meanwhile, Rooney's late equaliser at Stoke makes him Manchester United's top marksman in club history. That free kick, his 250th strike in a United shirt. Astonishing stuff there, and congratulations to him. And what a free kick it was too. Leicester's 3-0 loss at Southampton didn't ease relegation fears, and neither did Sunderland's 2-0 loss at West Brom. Moyes' men are rock bottom, 3 points from safety. Watford and Bournemouth were evenly split in a 4-goal encounter. West Ham still handling business without Payet, registering a 3-1 win at Middlesbrough, and Sam Allardyce's Palace dropped into the red zone, losing 1-0 at home to Everton. The Bundesliga is back, and it's fitting that the defending champions got the action back on the road with a 2-1 win at 10th place Freiburg. The Bavarians left it late with Lewandowski grabbing his second and the winner on 91 minutes. That win for Bayern keeps the dark horse Red Bull Leipzig 3 points adrift after they put 3 past Eintracht Frankfurt. Ralf Hasenhüttl's men lost 3-0 at Bayern with 10 men right before the break, and this game at home to Frankfurt played out in exact circumstances just in their favor. Dortmund are back in the top 4 following an extended absence after they overcame Bremen 2-1 away, while Hoffenheim remains the only undefeated team in Europe's top leagues. Their stretch continued with a 2-0 win at Augsburg. Schalke and Wolfsburg both clinched late 1-0 home wins. Darmstadt's 0-0 draw with Gladbach still leaves them propping up the table and looking likely for the drop. Mainz and Cologne also ended scoreless to keep both fairly comfortable in mid-table. Finally, the team from the capital fell 3-1 at Bayer Leverkusen, that result dropping Hertha Berlin into 5th at Dortmund's expense, while Leverkusen sits 6 points behind in 8th place. So just like in the Premier League, there was also late action in Germany, with both leagues seeing a combined 10 goals scored after the 80th minute and 6 of those coming after the 90th minute mark. So ladies and gentlemen, it's never over till it really is in the beautiful game. A quick trip around the rest of Europe, and France has a new log leader in the form of Monaco. Nice's draw along with Monaco's 4-0 win means both teams traded places at the top of the tree. In Italy, Juve remains unchanged at the top, but the movement is right under them in the battle for Europe as a revitalized Inter has shot up to 5th, while Roma has closed the gap on 1st to just 1 point. Finally, a battling 4-3 win for Sevilla lodges them 1 point behind Real Madrid in 1st and Barcelona in 3rd in what is another tight race for La Liga. So it's a new year, but still more gripping action to keep us entertained for the second half of this year's season. League action makes way for cup football this midweek, and before I wrap up, I want to give a big congratulations to my countryman Cameroon for making the second round of the African Cup of Nations, coming second to Burkina Faso in Group A. There's more football from the African continent coming up, but I'll let my man Sonny fill you guys in on what's been going on in Gabon. From me, Loic Youth, sporty cheers.
Thanks, Loic. And here's another fun Nations Cup fact for our Voice of America listeners. 9 is the biggest number of goals that have been scored in a single Africa Cup of Nations match. It happened at the 1963 Nations Cup Finals, which were hosted by Ghana. During a first-round group match in Kumasi, Egypt beat Nigeria 6-3. The Pharaohs of Egypt got 4 goals from their late marksman, Hassan El Shazly, who died in 2015 at age 71. El Shazly was described as lethal with both feet, and he knocked in 4 goals against the Nigerians 54 years ago in Ghana. And just to put those 9 total goals in perspective, the highest scoring matches at Gabon 2017 have featured 4 goals each. Algeria and Zimbabwe drew 2-2 on January 15th in Franceville. The Democratic Republic of Congo and defending champion Ivory Coast also drew 2-2 on January 20th in Oyem, Gabon. And in one more 4-goal match, Morocco topped Togo 3-1, also on January 20th in Oyem. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard. Happy Monday, Doug.
Happy Sporty Monday. Greetings, Sonny.
Sporty greetings to you, Doug. What is trending in the sports world Monday?
Yes, indeed. Well, of course, the Australian Open, which has been going on for some time now. And yet again, we had some interesting action, I think, here on Monday. Now, you know, this competition, we've been talking about how much top-notch talent we've been seeing getting eliminated, even early on in the goings. Now, that was not the case today for Rafael Nadal. The Spaniard led a 4-set straight win over France's Gael Monfils. I always struggle with that name, but I think it's
Monfils. I think you got it right.
So Nadal was a 9th seed going in, and most of the observers, the commentary, I didn't see it, but most of the commentary I've been reading says he looked great in his play. So now with Novak Djokovic out and Andy Murray out, the path is looking better for Rafael Nadal. Now, I'll just also say the same thing I think might also be said for, we were just chatting a bit about Serena Williams. She looked great in her match against Barbara Strykova in straight sets. Again, she's going on to the quarterfinals now, where she's going to face Johanna Konta, who is herself the number 9 seed. So two real top-notch talents I think people will be watching. There was some other action, just very quickly to kind of wrap that up, in other men's action. We saw number 3, Milos Ranić, defeat number 13, Roberto Bautista. Number 11, David Goffin, defeated number 8, Dominic Thiem. And number 15, Grigor Dimitrov, defeated Dennis Eastman. He wasn't even ranked, as you remember. He was the guy last week who had that stunning upset victory Well, now he's out of the competition. So as we were saying, you know, it'd be fun to watch this guy go, but, you know, it's every game leads to another game, to another game.
That's right. So you got to build on your success almost.
Exactly so, exactly so. So he had a bit of a rough go there, but what a ride. In women's action, we saw number 5, Karolina Pliskova, defeat number 22, Daria Gavrilova. Number 9, Johanna Konta, as we just mentioned. She's defeated number 30, Ekaterina Makarova. And then Mirjana Lucic-Baroni defeated Jennifer Brady. She, a American hopeful, 6'4", 6'2". So things are narrowing down there in Melbourne.
Doug, you mentioned some of the big names that have been ousted down under. Both the world number ones on the men's and women's side, Andy Murray, Angelique Kerber, both mm-hmm. packing their bags.
Mm-hmm.
With Kerber now eliminated from the tournament, do you think that makes it easier for Serena?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know. The level that they play, that Serena Williams and Kerber play, I don't know that there's ever easy. I'm not a tennis player. It's just never been something that I've been able to really conquer. And so I'm just so enormously impressed by what they do and how easy they make it look. And I know they are working hard out there. Certainly the path is clearer for Serena Williams now. And maybe she's got, you know, again, we've talked about this world record possibly coming up. You know, maybe there's this kind of spirit, you know, people, you know, kind of rooting for her. She's not exactly an underdog, but she certainly is a Titanic figure in tennis, so it'd be great to watch a little history in the making, perhaps.
And we were chatting before your segment,
right,
Doug, how Serena and Roger Federer share an age in common.
They do, and I don't know why this surprises me, but both of them are 35 years old. Now, when I think of 35, I tend to mostly wish that I were 35 again. I have definite memories from that time. But you know, both of them, Federer's playing very well as you mentioned. So both of them really just, you know, at the tops or near peaks of their game. I think you could argue that Federer's kind of, you know, he had a bit of a dip there, so he's really kind of struggling to come back. But you know, you think 35, well, that's young, but in professional tennis these days, boy, oh boy, that's, you know, that's really pushing the age limit.
It is.
And so fascinating to see how, at least for these two, you know, experience and talent seems to, for the moment, be winning out over age and youth.
Doug, I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What else is trending, Doug?
Well, of course, here in the United States, we are looking at the Super Bowl coming up. This is the 51st Super Bowl, and yesterday, Sunday, we had the conference championship, so we're now down to two teams. The Atlanta Falcons, downed the Green Bay Packers 44-21, kind of an embarrassment there. I think a lot of people had been thinking that, you know, Aaron Rodgers, with his style of play and his clutch play, that this was going to be a much closer game. Atlanta got several good interceptions off Rodgers, so they just kind of got it and ran with it. Over on the other side, the Patriots, the New England Patriots, defeated the Steelers 36-17. A lot of Steelers fan obviously disappointed there. So here's what it comes down to. It's the Atlanta Falcons and Matt Ryan versus the New England Patriots. I'm getting my teams mixed up here. And Tom Brady. So the Patriots have been there at the Super Bowl 9 games before. So that's a record in the NFL. Ryan has led the Atlanta Falcons to the Super Bowl once before. They did not win. So I think maybe they're looking at this as a little bit of comeback. But very quickly, I know we run out of time and I tend to kind of go on here, but I have to share one of those things on social media that you just never know what's going to take off. Well, Tom Brady yesterday at the game, I don't know if you saw it, he was wearing, it doesn't even look like a coat. It's just this sort of enormous tent. I mean, you could fit easily four people under there or something. It was just the strangest looking thing. Well, of course, not only are people using the hashtag Tom Brady's coat, but now there is a Twitter account at Tom Brady's coat. So Tom Brady's coat is now tweeting. Just in case you wanted to know, you can follow him there.
Thanks, Doug. VOA's Doug Bernard. And that wraps up the January 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Jackson Mvunganyi. Thanks also to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The human rights situation in North Korea remains abysmal. So says the most recent report sent by the U.S. State Department to the U.S. Congress. Indeed, the report states that serious human rights abuses committed by North Korea include extrajudicial killings, forced labor, torture, and prolonged arbitrary detention, as well as rape, forced abortions, and other sexual violence. Many of these abuses are committed in the country's political prison camps, which hold an estimated 80,000 to 120,000 prisoners, including children and family members of the accused. The government also maintains an extensive system of forced labor through its rigid controls over workers and restricts the exercise of freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, association, religion or belief, and movement. There is no independent media in North Korea. All media is strictly censored and no deviation from the official government line is tolerated. Authorities prohibit listening to foreign media broadcasts and take steps to jam foreign radio broadcasts. Various ministries are responsible for modifying television and radio equipment to prevent users from accessing material from overseas and other material deemed illegal by the government. Individuals accused of viewing foreign films are reportedly subject to imprisonment or even execution. This report also details the conduct of persons determined by the State Department to be responsible for the commission of serious human rights abuses or censorship in North Korea. Topping the list is Kim Won-hong, Minister of State Security. According to the 2014 UN Commission of Inquiry on Human Rights in North Korea report, the Ministry of State Security is implicated in widespread gross human rights violations. It administers the country's network of political prison camps, where according to defector testimony and satellite imagery, summary executions and torture are commonplace. Many others share responsibility for the horrific human rights abuses suffered by the North Korean people on a daily basis. With this latest report, the U.S. gives a voice to the voiceless and reminds the North Korean people that they are not alone and not forgotten.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.